So Malala Fund started Gulmakai Network, and the goal of this mission is to empower local leaders and local activists. So we support them, and we are already working in Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nigeria, and also the Syrian refugee areas. So we want to increase that investment and also support local advocates as well, local girl advocates. So for that we have announced $3 million, and we want to expand that group, redouble our efforts, and make sure we can reach to as many local activists as we can, because they are the real change makers in their community, and when we empower them, through them we can bring change.
That's a handsome amount of money. Specifically, how would you like to see this used where it really helps girls towards education?
So through this money, we would invest it in local leaders and local activists. These local activists, they speak out locally, nationally, they campaign for girls' education. So for example, in Nigeria, our activists and we together, Malala Fund together, we campaign for making sure that the Nigerian government, they increase the education from 9 years to 12 years. So we succeeded in that campaign, it became part of the law. And we are doing similar campaigning in Pakistan and Afghanistan. We are also including teachers training. We are also including empowering other girls and helping them so that they can also talk to the leaders. It also includes e-learning and other improvements in the quality of education. So it is a vast project. It covers many areas, but our main goal is to empower local leaders.
Beyond Pakistan, Afghanistan, Nigeria, I understand you've traveled also through the Middle East, through other parts of Africa, and then Central America or South America. Tell us about some of the striking things you observed in your efforts to promote girls' education when you visited these places.
So this year I went on a girl power trip, and I went to America, Canada, then Nigeria, Iraq, and Mexico. And in these places I met amazing and incredible girls, and I heard their inspiring stories. In Iraq, I met a girl called Najla, and she was 14 years old when she was wearing her wedding dress, and she took off her high heels and she escaped from her wedding. She ran away, and later on her village was captured by the extremists, ISIS, and she was actually attacked, but she did not stop, and she's still continuing her education. She's speaking out. She has survived, and she resisted all that she went through, and the things that we cannot imagine. For a second, she has gone through all that, but she's still fighting for education, and she wants to be a journalist. So these are the stories that inspire me. But my aim is to bring these stories then to a global platform like the UN, and allow these girls to meet their country leaders, their local leaders, so that their voices can be raised.
It was amazing watching you. In addition to the young woman you mentioned, you also brought a young woman from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. What was her story? What made you bring her to the UN to speak to world leaders?
So in Lancaster, in America, I went to that city and I met this young girl. And I think she did not know about my story, but she was telling me her story. And she really inspired me because she went through a lot of difficulties in her country, Congo, and how she saw brutalities in front of her eyes when her family members were killed. And she has seen the worst that we can ever imagine. But she resisted all those conflicts, all those wars that she saw, and now she's in the US, she's fighting every day, she's achieving her dreams to be a nurse. Her name is Mary Claire, and I'm really proud of her.
World leaders have also been gathering here from all over the world. What would you say is your key message to the heads of state, leaders of government, presidents, sheikhs, and all the leaders who came? If you could talk to them directly, what are you saying to them concerning girls' education?
So all the leaders I'm meeting, I'm just reminding them of their responsibilities, that they are holding the positions in which they are responsible for their people and for the future generation. And for the future generation, they cannot ignore their education. So they have to invest in the education of girls and boys. And I remind them that they have to increase investment towards schooling, towards quality education. Otherwise, we will lose this future generation. This will impact not just the children, not just the girls, but all of us. So we have to invest those 130 million girls who are out of school. We have to support them. We have to stand with them, make changes in the law, and also take action.
If we leave the world leaders aside, you come to people like me. I come from a home where I've had four sisters before me. They didn't get the chance to go to school, but they helped me to go through university. When I didn't have food, they would give me food. we don't think, or many of us don't think, the issue is just for you, or for girls, or for women alone. What should we, the men, the boys, the fathers, the uncles, tell us directly what we should be doing?
So I think men, they have to do a lot. And my father is an inspiration because his five sisters could not go to school. So he decided that he would allow his own daughter to go to school to get her education and then to raise her boys. When we started campaigning in Swat Valley, when terrorism started and girls' education was banned, there were many other girls who wanted to speak out, but their parents, their brothers did not allow them. My father was the one who did not stop me. So we have to believe in girls, we have to believe in our sisters, in our daughters, and allow them to be who they want to be. As my father says, that you do not have to do something, just do not clip their wings. And if you do not clip their wings, just let them fly and let them achieve their dreams.